Hello and welcome to Self Work. I'm Dr. Margaret. Today we're going to talk about the benefits and losses of saying no. But first, a word from our sponsors. Do you wish you had a healthier diet? Let's be real. Eating healthy can be a hassle. There's shopping and meal prep, and especially if you're trying to manage depression or anxiety, what if there was an easier way and a way for you to be assured you're taking care of your family? Meet Sunbasket, a team of dietitians and chefs that design wholesome, nutritious, and delicious meal kits delivered to your door. Each week, you can choose from a brand new selection of quick and easy meal kit recipes with a wide variety of dietary options, plus dozens, literally dozens, of snacks, salads, breakfast items, and more. I discovered Sunbasket during the pandemic, and was that ever a game changer? Their meal kits are quick and easy, even if you're not a pro in the kitchen. Thanks to Sunbasket's commitment to clean ingredients and organic fresh produce, there's no easier way to eat your very best. So go to sunbasket.com/selfwork today to save $120 across your first four deliveries. That's sunbasket.com/selfwork to save $120 across your first four deliveries, plus free shipping on your first order. This is Self Work, and I'm Dr. Margaret Rutherford. At Self Work, we discuss psychological and emotional issues and what you can do about them, whether that's learning self-acceptance, taking action, or seeking therapy or treatment. 8 years ago, I extended the walls of my practice to reach those of you who might already be knowledgeable about mental health treatment, but also to those of you who might say you'd never darken the door of a therapist. And yet, you are here. I'll answer your questions while I invite you to take a few minutes for your own self-work. Saying no leads you to making a decision just like saying yes, but it also gives you the opportunity to wonder, why am I saying no? Do I say no too much? Why can't I say yes? Do I say yes too much? It really helps you begin to get to know yourself better. Welcome to this week's edition of Self-Work. Today on Self-Work, we're talking about the benefits and losses of saying no, or basically, how is it helpful to express what you're ready to do, want to do, or consider doing, and what you're not. The word that's often used to talk about this is boundary. But do you have trouble saying no? Or can you identify the how, when, where, and why to say no? Or put another way, when to say yes? We'll focus on how much of your decision-making is affected by depressive states, bipolar states, anxious states, and personality disorders that have a huge bearing on how you decide to say no or not. Our voicemail today is from a young woman whose mother is highly volatile at home, but who can be quite loving and wonderful at other times. She read my article on borderline mothers, and it strongly resonated with her. I'm sure some of you can also relate. It's a very confusing family dynamic, but one that's more common, perhaps, than you might think. I'll have that article in the show notes. So let's hear from our longtime sponsor and my daily morning routine, AG1. When AG1 first approached me about sponsoring Self-Work, I, of course, had to try it. I not only loved it because I could tell an improvement in my overall energy level, I could tell a difference in how my body felt, how even with my busy schedule, I could count on my body doing what it was supposed to do every day. And now there are studies being published showing that what I've been feeling is backed up by science. In one study, 97% of participants felt digestion improved after 90 days of drinking AG1. And in another, the actual composition of the microbes in your gut changed for the better. Add that to the fact that AG1 is in powder form, so it's easier for your body to digest. What good is a supplement if your body can't absorb and use it? So start with AG1 and notice the difference for yourself. It's a great first step to investing in your health, and that's why they've been a proud partner of mine for so long. Try AG1 and get a free bottle of vitamin D3K2 and 5 free AG1 travel packs with your first purchase at drinkag1.com/selfwork. That's a $48 value for free if you go to drinkag1.com/selfwork. Check it out. So can you say no? In this episode, I'm going to focus on the difficulties and the benefits of saying no and how various mental health struggles like depression or anxiety affect whether you do or don't say no. First, let's talk about the gifts of saying no. Last time I flew on an airplane, I was seated in front of two people, and one of them rarely, if ever, stopped talking. I don't think they knew each other. At least for the first 30 or 45 minutes, we'd been waiting for takeoff, and he was talking. We'd taken off and were above the clouds, and his talking continued. He was telling stories about coming to Arkansas and what he discovered about our fair state. But then I overheard the woman who was seated next to him say, "Oh, I have my airplane reading here," which was a huge hint, I assumed, that she was saying no in her own very polite way. He stopped for about 10 minutes, but then found some reason to start talking again. She must have given up because they continued to chat until we landed. Or maybe she loved talking for all I know. There are some folks out there who just will not take no for an answer. And you've got to use much stronger means of discouraging whatever is going on than a polite yet unassertive comment about plane reading. So what can you gain from saying no? Our airplane example is a good one for the first reason, self-care. When you let it be known that something is unwelcome or not doable, often that involves self-care or reflects self-care. Being aware of what it is you're hungry for or how you'd like to spend the next hour or whatever it is. Self-awareness is at the bottom of good self-care, and that's far different than self-centeredness or selfishness. In fact, I have a podcast episode on just that topic, and I'll have that in your show notes. But quickly, self-centeredness is the habit of making what's happening around you about you. If a coworker is out sick, you might have the thought, "Well, I'm not going to work harder just because they got sick. I'm not feeling so hot myself." Instead of saying, "You know what? I'll take care of some of their workload." Selfishness means not really caring about what others want or need, and instead grabbing what's available for yourself. Back to the office scenario. "Well, since they're off today, and remember, they're sick, not off, I'm going to eat the cupcake Jill left on their desk. I want, so therefore I get." That's selfishness. But saying no in the context of self-care can be critical because self-care relies on the presence of self-awareness, as we said a minute ago, meaning that you've sort of checked in with yourself. You've taken your own temperature, so to speak. It sets a boundary of where you stop and someone else begins when you say no. It's honoring where you might be energy-wise or time-wise. It's often making others important, but also about letting your own needs and wants rise to the top of the pile from time to time. So, saying no can reflect good self-care. But it's an incredibly important ego skill as well. Now, what's an ego skill? An ego skill is something you do or think or say that is an expression of quote-unquote self and is positive in your life. Now, many people avoid conflict at any price, and saying no can sometimes, but not all the time, cause conflict, even though it can be an ego skill. So what else does saying no do? It tests your relationship with others. How does the other person handle it when you say no, whether it's a friend or a coworker or a potential partner? After hearing no, do they try to cajole or manipulate or even dominate? Or do you receive understanding and respect? Do you hear, "I can't believe you're being so selfish"? Or do you hear, "Well, I wish you wanted to go to the concert, but I can ask someone else. I'll miss you." Now, maybe it's you who struggles with saying no. Maybe you fear that you won't be liked, or more dramatically, that you'd be abandoned if you don't go along with what someone else wants. Or maybe you're scared or insecure about being disappointing. Maybe at some point in your life, someone tried to make you feel bad about setting a boundary, of saying no, of differing in your opinion from their own. Have you heard anything like this? "I can't quite believe you feel the way you do. I don't think you realize how much that hurts me." Ugh, if you have. That is manipulation, pure and simple. Sure, a healthy person can be surprised or even shocked that someone they care about feels differently than they do. But how much you let that hurt you is totally in your own power. Here's another benefit of saying no. When you decide to say no to someone, it gives you an opportunity to figure out why you're saying it. Let's say that you're saying no to an offer to take a spontaneous vacation. But this is what you say. You know, it's never worked out for me to do that. I know I'm a planner and I struggle with what feels impulsive to me. So that gives you the opportunity to say to yourself, why do I have trouble with being more spontaneous? Maybe the last time you were, it didn't work out, but do you want to keep that fear? So basically what I'm suggesting in saying no, you want to wonder, is it for a healthy reason I'm saying no? One that I really believe is in my best interest? Or for an unhealthy reason, such as fear or insecurity, guilt or shame? And if you never say no, if you never set limits, then you don't create this chance for self-assessment and, again, increased self-awareness. I'll use myself as an example. I have a fear of heights, even little bitty ones. It's kind of silly. So when I'm asked to do something in my exercise Pilates class that involves like standing on the Pilates reformer, I can kind of freak out. And my balance stinks too, so that makes it worse. But then I have to make a decision. I can say no to trying it and modify the exercise somehow. Or do I say to myself, don't let your fear make you say no? Saying no leads you to making a decision just like saying yes, but it also gives you the opportunity to wonder, why am I saying no? Do I say no too much? Why can't I say yes? Do I say yes too much? It really helps you begin to get to know yourself better. So let's take a break and we'll be back in just a moment. Are you feeling overwhelmed by hormonal changes? If you're a woman, you are definitely not alone. There are more than 1,000 hormone disruptors living rent-free in our environment right now, in our food, our water, the air we breathe, the clothes we wear, our skincare, and they all mess with our hormones. Then there's the natural hormonal changes our bodies go through, perimenopause, menopause, and while it's a natural process, it doesn't mean we don't suffer through it. Certainly, perimenopause especially threw me for a loop far before I was expecting it. The good news is that we don't have to suffer through any of it anymore because now we have Hormone Harmony, a formula made only with herbal ingredients that are shown to reduce hormonal symptoms in women of all ages. In fact, Hormone Harmony has become a phenomenon. Women cannot stop talking about it on social media. A bottle of Hormone Harmony is sold every 24 seconds. That's 50 orders in the time it takes you to listen to Self-Work. For a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code SELFWORK at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code SELFWORK for 15% off your first order today. But this brings up another point. When is saying no an unhealthy choice? First, when it's become a habit. This can be extremely true with depression or anxiety. With depression, especially more severe depression, saying yes to anything can be difficult. You're wanting to isolate. The last thing you want to do, maybe the last thing you believe you can do, is to reach outside of your norm and say yes to something. But saying no can become very habitual, almost rote. That's often called a negative mindset, or seeing the obstacles to something happening and jumping onto the rightness of that choice. Oh, you know, I don't want to do that. It's crazy. No. Your life can become smaller and smaller with every no you say. And your depression can worsen as you spend more and more time not connecting or working toward connection of some kind. In a fairly recent Tom Hanks movie called A Man Called Otto, he played a guy who'd lost his wife and was living a smaller and smaller life, with a neighboring family pushing and pulling at him and giving him a renewed sense of purpose and importance. He risked saying yes. That story reminded me of my own actual work during the pandemic with a man who'd lost his wife to Parkinson's. But when he came into therapy, he let her death become what he focused on, instead of their love for each other and the family they'd created. He began to open up again to neighbors who'd always dropped by when he and his wife were both sitting on the porch. And what did he do? He also began sitting on the porch, obviously without her, but beginning to live again, saying yes instead of no. And when I started seeing him, he was saying no to everything. He had more to grieve, more to accept, but also it was time for him to connect, which is exactly what his wife would have wanted him to do. Now let's talk about anxiety. If you've watched Inside Out 2, which is a movie for kids, but we grown-ups need to watch it too, it introduced the emotion of anxiety. And in that movie, anxiety had to learn that being overplanned and controlled really doesn't prevent bad things from happening. Saying no can feel very protective when you're battling anxiety. Now, let's not throw anxiety out the door. It has some definite benefits. One of those, for example, is honoring the difficulty of something. You're supposed to feel anxious when you're trying something new. It revs up your thinking. It puts you a little bit on guard. If yes makes you feel anxious, remember, it's also giving you the opportunity to look at how fear and anxiety could begin to rule your life. Now, there's one more point I want to talk about. How do you handle being told no? Do you hold a grudge or resentment? Do you get angry? Do you take the no too personally? So where did you learn that those were acceptable responses to someone not agreeing with you or not wanting to do the same thing you want to do? There's a term called conditional love. So what does that mean? Conditional love is when a parent, let's go back to your first relationships, it's when a parent gives you the message that their loving you is dependent on you pleasing them. They'll actually withdraw their love if you don't. And it's not pleasing to say no to them or have values that are different than theirs, want a career they don't approve of, not having the same sexual identity as they believe is right. Saying no in these situations, taking a stand that parents either don't understand or even try to understand, can lead to children not feeling loved for who they are. They also learn that that's love. That's what love is. It's conditional love, and they can carry it on in their own families with their own children. Now, adult children cannot like the choices their parents are making. They can say, "Mom, Dad, what in the world are you thinking?" Whether they're saying yes or saying no. I got a question in my email about a man who had remarried and his wife was much, much younger than him. And they were moving pretty quickly and the adult children were going, "Wait a minute, we got to get used to this." So sometimes you need to look at what you're asking of other people. Here's an example from my own life. After my parents died, I was becoming more dependent than was healthy on someone in my family. She sat me down and said, "Margaret, I can't be this for you." She was saying no. I had to swallow hard. It was a tough conversation, but it was a great gift to me. I didn't realize how much I was leaning on her, and I needed to grieve my parents' deaths and get on with it. Now, she's a very loving, kind woman, don't get me wrong. I was just asking too much. So think about how you handle being told no, and maybe how you might want to change your response. Here's my last point for today. Saying no, or expressing what you want or don't want, value or don't value, sets the stage for compromise. Saying no isn't necessarily stating that you'd never consider something, but you're saying no to exactly what's being presented. Think of the game of football. The offense has decided on the play they're going to try, and they line up. The defense's play is a response to either what they see on the field or what they predicted the other team will do, and they also take their stance. Then the play happens. What's my point? You can't make a play happen without two people or teams taking a stance, expressing an opinion or desire, a want or perceived need. When both people or parties take a stand, then negotiation can occur. But if one always says yes or always says no or is wishy-washy, then there's no real negotiation or compromise and a much decreased chance to build trust. You build trust when you negotiate and compromise. Both people get some of what they want and give up some of what they want. And I think that's very, very important in long-term relationships. So look at your own tendencies. Do you ever say no? Do you always say no? Do you think that saying no is selfish? How do you handle it when someone says no to you? Do you know how to negotiate? Were you loved conditionally? And if you were, how have you tried to not love that way yourself? So many questions. I hope you find the answers that will be helpful to you.
SpeakPipe message from DrMargaretRutherford.com.
Hi, Dr. Margaret. I just found your website and your article on mom is emotionally unstable, and it resonated with me deeply. I have this problem where my mom was, ever since I was a child, kind of black and white, sometimes very nice, very friendly, especially to outsiders, and then on the other hand, also switching very quickly, screaming, yelling, shouting, only blaming me, and everything in between. And I moved out 2 or 3 years ago. I'm currently 21, and I still feel like I haven't really moved on. The only thing that got better is that I'm aware of my emotions and of my feelings now. But I still feel like that I want to spend time with my mom, and on the other hand, I feel like I just want to run away and shut her off my life completely. But then I feel just very guilty, also because she's probably very ill, and she doesn't really talk about that, but she kind of lets it slip through. I don't really doubt the fact, because the way she's been handling life, it's like only either a black or a white version. So I think her worldview might just get imposed on her body. I mean, emotions affect your body pretty deeply if you feel them for a long time, right? And logically speaking, I want to spend time with her because she's my mom, and because she doesn't seem like she's doing those things consciously to me, but it's no excuse of how she's been handling those past years and of how she's been acting. So I need a way to distance myself from that and to be able to be free of those confusing emotions.
The voicemail for today describes almost perfectly how children feel that they're being parented by someone with a personality disorder, especially borderline personality disorder. But it can be true of anyone whose personal relationships are sabotaged by disordered or chaotic emotions. Real intimacy and creation of trust is almost impossible. It's also a strange phenomenon, but many people who share borderline traits, or really any one of what's called the cluster B disorders, borderline, narcissistic, histrionic, and antisocial disorders, can also have an outside or exterior personality style that's quite different than the one their family experiences. What are cluster B disorders? They are marked by inappropriate, volatile emotionality and often unpredictable behavior by the one who has it. With structure, people with borderline personality can do extremely well, such as in the workforce. I've talked about this before on self-work. But you can imagine how it feels to be this woman whose friends or the community know her mother is kind and loving. Yet at home, she's the target for screaming fits and manipulative threats, especially if she sets a boundary, followed by over-the-top gifts and requests for forgiveness and return to the status quo. I think one of the most helpful ideas to have in cases like this is to realize that that mother isn't withholding something from this daughter that she has the capability of giving. For whatever reason, she doesn't have any real insight to her impact on others or didn't learn how to regulate her own emotional states, but instead is almost completely ruled by them. Now, someone with borderline can get into therapy and do pretty well, but for most people with borderline, it takes a long time. So to continue on to our saying no theme, those with BPD or borderline personality don't take it well when you set a boundary or define an expectation. They may initially go along with you, but they're likely to come back with a plan to get back in control of the relationship. Again, what's important to hear is that you saying no can often feel like complete abandonment to them. There are many good books on how to love someone with borderline personality disorder. All of them stress staying emotionally detached, or at least not engaging in the emotional volatility that they like to pull you into. You'll lose that battle almost every time. The classic books are I Hate You, Don't Leave Me and Stop Walking on Eggshells. Another that's a more expensive book, but a great one, is Understanding the Borderline Mother. I certainly wish this reader or listener good luck, and I want to remind her once again, her mother isn't withholding something from her. She just may not have it to give. Maybe that will help this reader stay more detached, but she also needs to grieve, and that in and of itself is hard work. If
if you've been curious about what I look like when I'm talking, since we don't do video for this podcast, you can go to YouTube. I have the link for mine. It's not a new channel. It's been a channel for a while, but we are really putting a lot of work into it. And I've got some videos that I think people are really enjoying. And I will answer your comments as best I can. So join me on YouTube. I got a call this week from an insurance firm who wants me to do some recording for them. I'll tell you all about that after I do it in a couple of weeks. I'm real excited. But if your firm wants help with mental health initiatives in the workplace, or maybe you have a group that you think me talking about perfectionism and depression might be helpful, just contact me at askdrmargaret@drmargaretrutherford.com. Again, thank you for being here as always. Please take care of yourself, your loved ones, and your community. I'm Dr. Margaret, and this has been Self Work.